All right? There you go. I apologize. I think most of us are tired of all this stuff related to the virus. And I think the reality is that nothing's going to go away soon. And it has been something that, certainly for us as a congregation and for the elders to try to do things in a way that's productive, try to do the best we can to keep people happy. Everybody has opinions about what's going on and what's been going on, and everybody has a right to those. But we're coming back to what we at least think is something called normal. And it's not really, really what we call normal based on the way we've been doing things, but it's getting pretty close. And Dave's going to talk about that a little bit more when he does those the second amount of announcements. One thing that I have concluded for myself is the realization of how much we really need to be around one another as much as we possibly can. And we know the kinds of things that have gotten in the way of that, and that can't be helped. And everybody kind of approaches that a little bit differently. And so we've all been trying to be understanding of one another. At least I assume that's what you're doing. That's what I'm trying to do. And so what's going to be important, I believe, from this point onward is that we're going to have to do, you know, a whole lot more of that. Because it is a great opportunity for us to finally be back in here. I think most people, for a while, enjoyed something that we were doing when we were doing things in another way. I think when we first started recording the lessons and doing it live stream out of the little room in the back, I mean, there were people who enjoyed that, and now that we've been live streaming, people generally like that. But I think for the most part, what I find is that everybody's looking forward to this, you know, being here together. So even though we might be okay with it, you know, people will talk about singing outside, and that is, to me, an incredible experience. It's very inspirational for us all to stand out there. I don't know if everybody feels that way, but I do. But it is nice for us to be in here and be able to now begin to do the kind of things that, as a congregation, we hope will be pleasing to God. And so what we want to do is to evolve into what we were before, if you will. And so what we want to talk about this morning is how I believe we can more effectively move in a positive direction. Because really what it's going to do is it's going to take something where I and you, we're going to have to be, I think, understanding of one another. There's been a lot of that that's been going on so far. And so we're going to try to talk about moving past COVID this morning. And if we're going to be able to, if you'll notice there in the outline, acknowledge as necessary to follow Christ. That's one of those things. It is. We often say it's nice to be around Christians, and you know, sometimes people are easy to be around, some people aren't, but I think generally we understand that there are things that we owe to one another, even though that can be somewhat inconvenient for us to do that, for a lot of different reasons. You know, we don't fit well with people, there's maybe personality conflicts, whatever it may be, that kind of get in the way. But we all understand that we're supposed to love one another. In 1 John, the 4th chapter, what it tells me is that I'm supposed to love you and you're supposed to love me. But there's a reason for it. It's not just because it's a good idea or because it comes natural to you. John says there's no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. Because fear involves punishment, and the one who fears is not perfected in love. We'd love because he first loved us. If someone says, I love God, and hates his brother, he is a liar. For the one who does not love his brother whom he has seen cannot love God whom he has not seen. So, in a kind of theoretical way, if I want to know if I love God, then there has to be some sort of demonstration of my love for people. And I think we find that easier the more regularly we can see one another and touch base with one another, see one another in the audience. Even when we're out in the outside in the parking lot, and I'm standing here preaching to an empty room, and everybody's out there. I know they're out there. I don't know everybody who's out there, but I realize that we're having a sense of interest and a sense of connection with one another. And it's I an expression of love. And so I can't say that I love God if I don't act in a loving way toward you and you toward me. Paul says also in 1 Corinthians 15, it kind of puts my reality into perspective, being around other people. Paul says, but by the grace of God, 1 Corinthians 15, I am what I am. And his grace towards me did not prove vain. In other words, boy, I got a great shot of grace from God. And I'm doing the best I can to pay him back in a sense, even though he knows that he's saved by grace. But I labored even more than all of them, yet not I, talking about the other apostles, but the grace of God with me, whether then it was I or they, so we preach and you believe. So he knows, as his connection with the Christian church goes, I realize that I am who I am because of the grace of God. So I don't overthink or I don't overlook at myself as being someone of any significance. And so we all then come together. If we all, I mean, I can't really say that. I think we all will have that kind of an attitude because, you know, we have our bad days and things like that. But for the most part, I think we understand that by being here together, I'm reminded that you believe that grace has saved you and I believe that grace has saved you. I hope I said that right. But his grace, your grace, the grace of God extends toward me. In 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 8, it says, God is able to make all grace abound to you so that always having all sufficiency in everything you may have an abundance for every good deed. So we come together and this is something we acknowledge regularly. We have what we have because of God. And you can do that at home. You can be conscious of it at home in your prayer life. The things that we do by being around one another is we remember our relationship with God built upon His grace, and we all share that. And then whatever we have in this life comes from God. And by being together, I have that brought to my mind. And there is importance from the point of view of what holds us together. I think almost everyone feels a certain level of disconnect with us. And with one another. Even though we are together, many of us out there in the parking lot and then some in here, and we see and we talk to one another on occasion. But for the most part, we really don't connect with one another a whole lot, or we haven't. And it's something that must be a part of understanding why I want it to get normal, is maybe the best way to put this. And so the writer of Hebrews puts it in a way that you and I probably wouldn't put it, in describing how great it is that we have this relationship with God. Therefore, brethren, since we have a confidence to enter the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by a new and living way which he inaugurated through the veil, that is his flesh. This is all great Old Testament language that many of those who are falling away understand, because most of the ones who are getting discouraged are the Jewish Christians. Let us draw near with a sincere heart, full of assurance and faith, having our hearts sprinkled clean from all evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. And then the part of the passage that most of us have fed off of over the years. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. Now, generally, the way this passage is observed is this is the passage that says we shouldn't forsake the assembly. And it certainly says that, but it's a conclusion from which that comes, which is important, because we're here to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. I don't know. That might happen, and it's depending upon me, it's depending on you, and you know what kind of a mood you're in, and whether you're really allowing God's word to touch you, and it's the same thing for me. I understand that, you know, what we want is others to be something for us. Or maybe we just don't care about that. And we're fine ourselves. We don't really think we need anyone else. I do just fine. And I know, I've thought lifetime. But I have a responsibility to live a life where I love my brother, as John said, and also, as it says here, I want to be a part of something that stimulates other people to want to be Christians. Now, God intended for us to be together, and the way I'm going to explain it to you this morning is maybe not the kind of way you've been used to hearing it. It's just taking some passages that you know and I know, and trying to help us to understand that when God created us, He created us to be around other people, even though other people might not be real enjoyable for us. Then the Lord God said, this was at the end of creation, it's not good for man to be alone. I will make him a helper suitable for him. And then it says he fashioned the woman. And then he's all excited about that. He says, this now is bone of my bones. But the point is, Adam was able to be successful in a lot of the things that he did. He was a very busy guy in those early stages. But God says it's not good. You need somebody around you. And the reality is that even though I need other people around me, or I need someone with me, it doesn't mean that I'm always going to be real happy with that. I may not be in a mood for that, or however you guys go about life, I'm just trying to be as open and as honest as I can be. I believe that God has been with other people in order to really draw it into a life of faith. Well, here's the flip side of this, of someone who decided real soon he didn't really like being around other people. And that was Cain. Cain was all upset because God accepted Abel's offering and he didn't accept his. And it says in verse 5 that Cain became very angry and his countenance fell. Then the Lord said to Cain, well, why are you angry and why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? Do the right thing and things will get better for you. But if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door and its desire is for you, but you must master it. Now, I don't know the relationship that was there between Cain and Abel. But I'll tell you what happened. It wasn't that long ago that God said it's not good for man to be alone. And I'm telling you at this point, Cain didn't want to be around Abel. He wanted to not. Much, he killed them. Now, for us, maybe we just pull away from people, or if someone's a real problem for us, maybe we ignore them, whatever it may be. But we don't actually look at this individual and say, God, what with this guy? He knows what his feelings were about his brother. So he didn't believe he was better not being alone. For him, I want this guy gone. And so, I think we all understand, if we try to grasp what was going on with these guys, that he thought, get rid of a really good thing for him. Now, obviously, he hadn't thought it through all that well. And God helped him to see it. You know, come on, just get over it. You shouldn't be angry. Just do the right thing. Everything will be so much better for you. Other places where people didn't want to be around people. Elijah. 1 Kings 19, after the whole thing with the idols of Baal and how he was so victorious over the false prophets. And then as a result of that success, then he had the queen Jezebel who wanted to see him dead. And so he runs away travels a long distance just to get away from these people. And what seems that he's thinking the whole time while he's doing that is that, the only person who really cares around here about the really right things. And that's another one of these things. It's very hard to not do that because, I mean, that's the only brain I got is one, and I know what's going on inside there, and I don't really know what's going on in yours. So I understand how he felt, and you probably have too. He says, nobody's here, I'm the only one, and so he runs off down there and hides. And the text mentions that very same sentence twice. God finally there gathers with him, meets with him, so to speak. He listens to what he has said, and of course the reality was that he was He wasn't the only person who cared. In fact, crazily enough, there were like 6,000 other people, prophets, who were doing the right thing. So he's very, very self-absorbed, like I get and like you get sometimes. But anyway, what does God do? God doesn't explain anything in any great theory about how you ought to do good things for other people, and you've got talent, and come on, Elijah, you can do it. He just says, get up there and start being a prophet again. That's all it says in the text. Get up there. We need another king. It's your king. He didn't want to be around those people. I think it was kind of embarrassing for him. I mean, it's amazing that he did have this incredible experience destroying and leading others to do the right thing as far as these false prophets were concerned. But then all of a sudden, Jezebel just threw a whole cloud over that. And all of a sudden, that was what I was looking at the world. And we know how this whole thing with the virus is absolutely controlled very much of our thinking since last February or March. And it causes me to give pause a lot, you know, to think, I know there are other things that are necessary to be considered. And, you know, we walk into elders meetings, and when we have an elders meeting, it's always, you know, what's going on with the virus? We don't say it that way, but I mean, it's what we're going to do now. And it's a challenge, you know, because for the most part, the four of us who are now elders, we try to agree on everything, but, you know, reaching a consensus is not always easy, which tends to then make for longer meetings. But, you know, when they were having the problems with Jews and Gentiles in Acts 15, the whole idea was, how do we bring these people together? And so they came up with a solution as to how they were going to do that. You can study that if you have the opportunity in Acts 15. Well, there are things that kind of pop up today, you know, to show that we're all in the reality of understanding, you know, I think we need one another. I think we've come to realize that people need socialization. Like, I think he didn't want any socialization, but it would have been really good for him in a positive way if he would have actually engaged that. And people need more than just safety from the virus, too. I mean, that's important. And, you know, most of us are trying to do the best we can to stay well. And, you know, I just, you know, as a person over 70 now, Judy and I were able to get our first vaccination. Some of you have had yours, already had two. I don't know how much it's going to change things. May make me feel a little bit more confident being around other people and maybe think other people might be. I don't know how that's going to work. You know, if I'm walking around and maybe I'm not wearing a mask, what, do I need a big badge here that says, I've had both my vaccinations? And I'll go, okay, no sweat, man. I don't think that's going to happen. But we need socialization. The whole issue of what's going on with our kids. We have a number of teachers in this congregation. And I've not talked to all of them, but I've certainly talked to half a dozen of them and gotten their assessment. Okay, how is this working? And most of them say, it's not really working all that well. They have pointed out to me, generally, kids who are from a more supportive home, maybe financially or emotionally or educationally, those kids tend to do better. But even then, they've said that that's not always true. And they've concluded that kids aren't learning as well. This is, I guess, somewhat trite, but it's a whole, what I call the importance of fans at sporting events. I mean, it's really strange to watch these things. I mean, you know, with pictures of people sitting in seats, and they've got fake noise going on. And I don't know. I mean, I guess in some ways, I think they could, you know, they could still enjoy it. I mean, I know most people who've played in city leagues or played in school or whatever, and you probably played in places where there weren't very many people watching you, and it was fun anyway. But I understand why it's different for these guys. I mean, it's nice for them to be able to hear and be cheered by the home crowd. pro golfer who just recently won a tournament had complained on a couple of other occasions. It's just not the same. I don't like it. There's no fans out here. So when he's out golfing, it's like if you golf or you do anything like normal human beings do, you don't have people standing around watching you and going, oh yeah, that was really great. But he missed that. And his peaking of that complaint was met not too long ago by the first time that people, fans there, more than average, he won. And I kind of hated to see that, to tell you the truth. But, because he's kind of got an attitude. But anyway, it was like, yeah, this is what I wanted. I need the attention of the fans. I need to be enthused. And I think for the most people who play professional sports want to have people around them. So this isolation factor, all of us to one degree or another, realize that something's missing, and part of that is what we are as a congregation, that it's been missing. And so we move forward and we got all kinds of different opinions about what ought to be done and what ought not to be done. And someone, cornered me this morning and was letting me know about things that he thought we could do better, and why haven't we been doing this, and why aren't we doing that? And so I know, maybe this guy's a little bit more outspoken than others, but I think most of us probably have different ideas about the way things have been going. Well, if we're going to do it, even though we know that we are going to have different ideas, well, then we have to move forward with this whole idea of love, because that's what point number one was all about. Point number one was saying that this love, this connection with other people takes patience, and it's what God expects from us. 1 Corinthians chapter 8 is a very special chapter. It's a very short one, but it's really about love. Now, it's generally discussed as being, the passage talks about, what about people who eat meat offered to idols? How do we handle that issue? Because it was an issue in that local congregation. Now, it begins in verse 1 with Paul discussing, really, I believe, the significance of love being a part of the resolution of this problem. Concerning things sacrificed to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. And I think that's kind of saying, yeah, there are some people who really have it right, but I think he's also saying, look, we all have ideas about what we should be doing. Should we be doing this or not, eating meat offered to idols? Well, sometimes you think you've got it figured out, you understand it, and of course what he says, knowledge generally, if you think you've got it figured out, well, then you get kind of arrogant about it. It's kind of a natural thing. You think people who don't understand it as you do, maybe they're just not paying attention to what you're saying. If anyone supposes that he knows anything, he has not yet known as he has ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by him. So I think he's establishing here this significance of one of the ways we're going to move through this is by loving one another. And if you love God, God knows who you are, and you're looking to God to help direct you as to how to act. Now, he says, now here's the problem. Concerning the eating of things sacrificed to idols, totally foreign to us. But nevertheless, that's the problem. We know that there is no such thing as an idol in the world, and that there is no God but one. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords. He's saying, we all know, Paul, he preached, to those folks there in Athens in Acts chapter 17. He understands about the amount of false gods that are out there. He says, and yet for this there is but one God, the Father from whom are all things, and we exist for him, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, by whom all things are all things, and we exist through him. So he says, considering the eating of things offered to idols, we all know that idols are fake. Just putting it in my words. He says, we all know that, or at least we should. But not everybody understood it that way. And of course, you can understand that the individuals who had it really worked out in their minds, this is just fake. These idols aren't real. I can go in there and eat and a meal inside the temple, and it doesn't faze me in the least, because I'm just going in there to eat, that's all. It's got nothing to do with the idols. On the other hand, there are people who really haven't shaken that attitude. The attitude that, okay, we have to understand, these idols are nothing. That's the truth. So what happens now, as far as we got some people who understand this, and they're right. Paul says, I know that these idols are wrong. But what about the people who haven't really gotten to that place? You know, someone might say, well, here's what I think. I think if they still have a hang up about idols and the idols give them a problem other than just recognizing you tell people they're wrong, well, then maybe they're really not even Christians or not. Maybe they just haven't really understood anything about the gospel. If they're still confused on this one, this is the problem with those of us who know things. When we know something, a lot of times we just don't understand why other people don't know it like we do. And that's, I think, what the problem was in the congregation. He says, however, not all men have this knowledge, but some being accustomed to the idol until now eat food as if it were sacrificed to an idol. Not everybody gets it like I get it, Paul says. And their conscience being weak is defiled. But food will not commend us to God. In other words, the food doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, and we are neither the worse if we do not eat, nor the better if we do eat. That's the truth. Now, of course, as we move through this, what we do next with the virus and how I interact with people, all I'm asking you to understand is that we all, most of us, have a sense of here's the way this is supposed to go. And not everybody's going to do that. Now, you then have the choice to decide, okay, am I going to continue my association or am I just going to just say I just can't do it? And that's the choice. But he doesn't dismiss these people who don't understand this and say they got a problem, they just need to go study better. He wants them to still be considered amongst the group. But he says there's something you must do to keep these people as safe as possible. Because we don't want to lose them. He says, take care that this liberty of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. I can eat this meat. Okay, congratulations. But somebody can't. And some people can't. And this might cause someone to do the wrong thing. Just because I don't think anybody should have a problem with it. You know, and this might kind of relate to, you know, our social distancing, the wearing of masks, all these things that are all a part of what goes on now, and we all have opinions about those things. And sometimes we're not too patient with those who don't see it the way we do. He says, if someone sees you, you know, I go in there, let's say I've got it all nailed down, just like Paul says. And these idols are nothing, I'll just go in there and get my food. But if someone sees me, who have knowledge of dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? In other words, I owe that person who doesn't understand things the way he should consideration. So shouldn't I be aware of the fact that maybe if I go in there thinking this is no big deal, and he's been struggling with it, she's been struggling with it, and they go, you know, I think I may try that. And they go in there and they take their first bite, and they go, oh, man, what am I doing? This is wrong. Now, with the person who's got it together, what's he supposed to think about that? Well, I mean, if you're going to love him as a brother, you have to realize that you have had a part in what's happened to that person thinking they have now sinned. And if they're violating their own conscience, we know that if we believe it to be wrong and we do it, whether it is or isn't, you know, there is a problem that we have with God. He says, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? For through your knowledge, here's what happens in this situation. This is how important it is for me to try to understand the other people. Through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died. Your ability to handle this, all it's done is you've taken this weak person and you've totally ruined him. And this guy, Christ died for him as he was, he died for you. And so by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. What do you mean? I just was going in there and eating something. Boy, it seems like you're making a big deal out of this, Paul. And after all, it's the problem of the guy who doesn't get it. He's the real problem. It's not me. But what Paul says, when you cause that guy to wound his conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. Now, what does this have to do with the gist of my lesson? My gist of my lesson is, if we're going to move past COVID in a way the best we can, because it's not going away soon, and the conflicts are not going to go away soon, we must have our relationships welded and molded together in love and do all that we can to try to understand what's going on in people's minds the best we can, and realizing that they just may not come down in the same place on this one as I do. So, in the conclusion that I write there, after Paul gets his solution to this, he doesn't say that just needs to be trained better in the scriptures, the one who can't eat the meat. Paul puts it all on the guy who really thinks it doesn't matter, and he tells them, look, don't you cause someone to stumble. That's the end of it. So I have a responsibility in that regard. When I really start making my case to someone about here's the way I think it should be, here's my thinking about wearing masks, here's my thinking about social distancing, just be aware that it's possible that you may lead someone into doing something that they end up believing is really, really wrong. And what Paul says, don't lay it off on that person. You're the strong one. You take the responsibility for it. The best way for us to move past COVID is to regain any lost interest in our fellow believers and serve one another in love. I think all of us, I won't say all of us because I don't know what you're all thinking. I'm just saying that I know many people who believe that this disconnection has not been good for us as a congregation, and I agree. I mean, how we could have overcome it, trying to stay within the laws of the land as they are, doing our best in that regard. But I think it has caused us to be somewhat separated, I think unintentionally. So we serve one another in love. And if we do so, the church will then be built and, shall I say, reestablished and edified, Ephesians 4. And then what power we show over the virus then will assist our continued move forward. So we do the best we can to keep ourselves safe. And, realizing that there are things that are also to be considered. It's great if we all stay healthy. But that's just something we have to work with and still do what God says. And you know that, and I know that as well. So we can move forward. It's by loving one another. It's by understanding one another. Not get so frustrated with one another. I don't want to be like Cain. I don't want Abel around here anymore. He's done. I'm killing him. Those people around Cain, or the family as it was, they were all important to him, and he just said, I don't want to deal with it. So he just killed them. Let's be the kind of people that God wants us to be. And there's so many things that could be said about this. And as we all, get better and we all get our vaccinations, and there's going to be an evolution of things as we move forward. But we are together because God wants us together. And maybe we feel a little bit like Cain sometimes and want to just get rid of people. Not murder them, but I just can't deal with you anymore. That's not 1 Corinthians 8, I can tell you that. And it's certainly not the way I prove that I love God, as John says in 1 John. Thank you this morning for listening. I really, really do appreciate it. And I think we're excited about things as they're going to move forward. Dave's going to describe that to you. And we're looking forward to normal being regained. And then what was not so great about normal, maybe we can improve on that. Thank you very much. Thank you.